Got a question over the break about something I said a couple weeks ago, and I want to go back and give a little bit more background behind that. During the process of coming up with the Bill of Rights, there were some concerns about exactly how much should they state in the Bill of Rights about what our rights are. And one side argued that if you have a list at all, then people are going to challenge whether or not that list is complete, and we're going to have all kinds of battles. And so they came up with a compromise, and it is the Ninth Amendment in the Bill of Rights. And I want to read it to you because I haven't been reading these, but the language of this is quite interesting. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Well, think about that. That's a broad, broad amendment. And my comment that I made 2 weeks ago was that that was the basis upon which Roe versus Wade was passed. Okay? The only good thing that came out of that was it caused me to spend hours reading my Constitution trying to find out what the basis of Roe versus Wade really was. It ain't in there, folks. But here's what they said. Because the rights protected by the Ninth Amendment are not specified, they are referred to as unenumerated. The Supreme Court has found that unenumerated rights include such important rights as the right to travel, the right to vote, the right to privacy, and the right to make important decisions about one's health care or body. Okay? So the 9 unelected supreme beings have the ability to come in and take this little loophole in our Constitution and declare anything they want to declare. There are laws on the United States books that says you can't commit murder. There's also something in our Bible about that. I think it was one of the 10 suggestions. But they can use this to enact all kinds of wickedness and evil against us. And the reason I'm making a big point out of this is that we have an election 2 days from now in which the person that we're going to elect, whichever it may be, will have the right to appoint federal judges all up and down the line and fill any Supreme Court vacancies that should happen to come up during their term. And if they put people on the courts that take this loophole and expand it, they can just do all kinds of wickedness in the process. And so I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but I am going to tell you be careful that you pick the right man, someone that will appoint judges that follow what the law says and not make up their own laws. I mean, I don't understand how, when the Constitution itself says this Constitution is the law of the land, and it further says no one can pass any laws except the Congress, and yet Roe versus Wade is the law of the land. What? How do they do that? So anyway, now we'll get on with the lesson. But that Ninth Amendment, in case you ever want to study how they got Roe versus Wade, that's where it is. Yeah, Rick.
You know, as you said that, it so occurred to me there, actually wanting to prevent us from breathing fresh air. I'm not kidding. We went down to Denver Friday night to take a ride to see what's going on. The sign on the marquee says, mask mandated outside and in. And I'm seeing people walking around alone, subject to that mandate, which is a million times more healthy alone outside than putting a mask on. It is that crucial.
Yeah, I'm going to come back at the end of the class, and we're going to talk about that. I want to quickly cover the rest of the amendments because they are important for us to know about. I'm going to start out with the amendments that control the government or give the government its authority. And those are the 11th, the 16th, the 18th, and the 21st Amendments, all address various issues of what the government can and cannot do. The 11th specifically prohibits federal courts from hearing cases in which a state is sued by an individual from another state or another country, thus extending to the state's sovereign immunity protection from certain types of legal liability. I've made the statement in this class that I can't find any place where sovereign immunity was ever enacted into law. Well, this kind of tells how they get that. I dispute whether or not it's correct, but that's how they do it. The 16th Amendment, we all know what that dastardly thing did. The Constitution states that no taxes can be levied except by the numbers of people. It has to be done pro rata. Well, they couldn't raise enough money that way, so they passed the 16th Amendment, which removes existing constitutional constraints that limited the power of Congress to lay and collect taxes on income. That was forbidden. Specifically, the apportionment constraints delineated in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4 have been removed by this amendment, which also overturned some Supreme Court cases. But this is how our federal income tax came to be, and also the state income taxes that followed quickly on the tails of that.
So, in your opinion, can you do that? Is the 16th Amendment actually valid? Can you write an amendment to the Constitution that says the 40th Amendment says we have no right to assemble freely for worship? Can you do that?
I'm gonna come back to that at the end of the class. Okay. Basically, the Fifth Amendment, or Article 5, of the Constitution, says they can amend it in any way they want to, because it's the supreme law of the land.
So you could amend the Constitution to write an amendment that says there shall be no more Constitution in the United States, that's the last amendment.
They could write an amendment to the Constitution that says everybody has to eat with their left hand.
But it has to pass.
What if they don't have a left hand?
What if they what?
What if they don't have a left hand?
They're going to have to go really hungry. Okay?
I'll help you all.
Yeah, he'll help. All right, the 18th Amendment. What was that one all about? Well, those little self-righteous ladies that made up what's called the temperance movement, those ladies came to Congress and said, you need to pass an amendment banning alcohol because people drink too much and they do all kinds of evil things. So, lo and behold, they did it. They thought that sounded like a pretty good idea. Well, that only lasted about 3 years. excuse me, that lasted 13 years. And it was overturned by the 20th Amendment. The 21st Amendment, I'm sorry. It repealed the 18th Amendment and returned the regulation of alcohol to the states. Each state sets its own rules for the sale and importation of alcohol, including setting the drinking age. But here our federal government started meddling again, and they have a provision that says no federal money will be given to the states that allow minors under the age of 21 to drink alcohol. Okay? So the Constitution basically means very little if the federal government says we're going to withhold money if you do X, or we're only going to grant money if you do Y. Okay? So those amendments, Doug, are very, very dangerous. 14th Amendment granted United States citizenship to former slaves and to all persons subject to U.S. jurisdiction. I've always wondered, why do people on the island of Guam get to vote in our elections? Or Puerto Rico? Or various other jurisdictions of the United States? That's how. Because they're under the jurisdiction of the United States. So they get to vote in our elections, because an amendment said they could do that. I'll come back to that.
Do they have electoral college votes too? Guam and—
no, but there is one that I'm going to talk about here in a minute. Okay. 15th Amendment prohibits the use of race, color, or previous condition of servitude in determining which citizens may vote. So that was passed to give former slaves the right to vote. The 19th Amendment, which the ladies love, prohibits the government from denying women the right to vote. And incidentally, Colorado, I think, was the first state that granted the right to vote to women.
Wyoming.
Wasn't it?
Wyoming.
Oh, Wyoming was. Yeah, that's right. We were the first to authorize abortions.
Woo-hoo!
24th Amendment prohibits a poll tax for voting. One of the ways that they allowed for keeping people from voting was to allow me to say to you, Chris, you want to vote, it's going to cost you $12. That's a poll tax. And that was legal under the original Constitution. So the 24th Amendment took away the ability to do that.
I'd be okay with that as long as that money went to the candidate that I was voting for.
Oh, you naughty boy. 26th Amendment prohibits the government from denying the right of the United States citizens 18 years of age or older to vote on account of age. And that was brought about because of the Vietnam War, when all the young people were demanding the right to vote. And so they lowered it to 18, and that's how that came about.
If they can defend it, they sure as well should be allowed to vote for it.
What's that?
If they can defend it, they sure as heck should be allowed to vote for it.
Well, interestingly enough, it wasn't the ones that were in the military that were protesting. It was the people that refused to go into the military that were protesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, then we have a group of amendments that describe the way government should operate. That last group kind of put limits on them. The 12th, 17th, 20th, 22nd, 25th, and 27th are the ones that outline the things that the government is supposed to do. The 12th Amendment modifies the way the Electoral College chooses the president and vice president. It stipulates that each elector may cast a distinct vote, or must cast a distinct vote for president and vice president. The Constitution itself had a very short amount of language on the Electoral College, but it did allow you to say, I'm going to put both of my votes to the guy I want for president. And that way he's left either without a vice president, or he picks his own, or whatever. So they changed that and said, no, you got to split your vote, your two votes between president and vice president. The 17th Amendment modifies the way senators are elected. The original Constitution said that senators will be elected by the respective state legislatures. And, you know, it seems to me like this is a lot of to do about not very much, because if the citizens have voted in the legislature and the legislature follows the pattern of the population itself, the direct election should give basically the same results. But there's a big movement now to try and go back to the states electing their own senators through their legislatures. Maybe that'll make a difference, maybe it won't. But voters tend to, particularly in Colorado, split the Senate between the two parties. And it's been that way for most of my adult life, where we'd have one Democrat and one Republican as a senator. And yet, at any given point in time, the legislature was controlled by one party or the other, and you would expect them to keep it all within their party. So that's what's going on with that. 20th Amendment changes the date on which a new president or vice president in Congress take office. It used to be that they had until the following December to take office. Now they have to take office, the legislature, by the 3rd of January, and the president by the 16th of January. What that did is it shortened the period that there would be a lame duck Congress that could do all kinds of vile things. 22nd Amendment. What?
Can I go back to the prior discussion of senators being elected by the state Senate?
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea because, quote unquote, democracy, which is considered the worst form of government, as mentioned by John Adams, is more susceptible to wild caprice as we're having individuals vote for, I mean, the population as a whole, rather than senators, which is supposed to be the more deliberative body and not so capricious, that in theory, they would be better at selecting senators.
Well, let me give you my observation about that. Particularly in a state that has a dominating large city and a legislature of the same persuasion. We in Colorado typically are one senator gets elected mainly by the large cities, and the other one gets elected by the rural areas, which is where the Republicans are. Right now, if we had the legislature picking the senators, we would never have any representation for this rural part of our state at all. We would have two senators, both of which are Democrats, both of which are going to enact Democrat policies. which may or may not be good for rural areas. So that's my observation on it, Albert. Okay. 22nd Amendment. Limits an elected president to 2 terms in office, a total of 8 years. Now, this sentence interested me. However, under some circumstances, it is possible for an individual to serve more than 8 years. I was not able to do enough research to tell you how that works, but I suspect it would be. Let's assume that the president died with 3 months left in his term. The vice president steps in, becomes president. He would probably be allowed to serve for 2 additional terms on top of that. That's what I think that is. Okay? The 25th Amendment, that's been in the news a lot. What does that say? It says, if a majority of the cabinet members plus the vice president get together and declare the president unfit to serve his term, they can remove him from office. Okay? That would be a big disaster, and I will tell you, this amendment will be used if Joe Biden becomes president. And it probably will be used the day after the election. And Joe Biden will not be our president at all. And Kamala Harris, that's the way she doesn't like her name pronounced, will become president, and she is the most liberal member of Congress. I always thought it was probably the old grumpy old man who's an outright socialist, but it isn't. It's her. She is the most liberal member of Congress. And if Biden wins the election, she will be your president. And this weekend, on 2 different occasions, she has been introduced to a group of people as the next president of the United States.
My prediction is the vice will be Hillary at that point.
Well, Hillary is by nature the vice president of any vice you want to talk about. I shouldn't have said that. I take that back. Except it's recorded. Can we erase that? The 27th Amendment prevents members of Congress from granting themselves pay raises during the current session. Rather, any raises that are adopted must take effect during the next session of Congress. Now, the average length of time that an amendment takes to get passed is 7.3 years. If you take out this amendment, that average time drops to about 2 years. Want to guess how long this one took to get passed?
A day?
192 years. Because congressmen didn't want to put limits on their own salary. All right, those are the amendments to the Constitution. Because of the imminence of our election, I want to show you some of the ways that it appears to me that the election is being swayed in a way that's very subtle and yet it's very obvious. The COVID situation is, oh, I want to choose my words somewhat carefully. It's the biggest fraud ever perpetrated on the world. That was a slight exaggeration. Might be second biggest. I'm going to give you some statistics that I worked out this morning, and I certify that they're absolutely maybe true. But I think they're true. Okay? We've all been following the statistics that started out coming out of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and it became fairly obvious that they were fixing the numbers in ways that made them more favorable to their cause. And so the president took that away from them and gave it to some other organization that's not quite as in the tank. So one of the things that came out as a result of this information is that virtually every death that has taken place in this period of time has been described as a COVID death, okay? Someone riding down the road on a motorcycle that gets hit by an airplane and thus deceased is treated as a COVID death. Okay. One of the reasons they do that is because the healthcare professionals that treat them get as much as $35,000 for treating a COVID patient. So money is at the root of a lot of this, but also power. The Democrats, in my opinion, have very little platform upon which to get votes. Have any of you gone online and read the platform of the Republican Party and the Democrat Party? The contrast is, like Doug said, a mirror. And the Democrat Party is filled with things that we would not agree with, their platform. They want to do away with God. They openly say they want to do away with the traditional family. They support abortion, and on and on and on and on.
They so, can practice that all they want. Then they'll delete themselves off the face of the earth.
They what?
I said they can practice that all they want and delete themselves off the face of the earth.
Well,
that's why they have to get into the schools.
I don't know how long we could survive waiting for that to happen.
Right.
That's the problem. One of the factual pieces that came out of this, though, was that of the, at that time, 190,000 reported COVID deaths, only 6% of them had died from COVID and no other cause. Okay? So that at that time amounted to about 9,000 people instead of 190,000 people that had died from COVID. Now, the rest of them, you could probably say half of them died with COVID and heart condition, or with COVID and diabetes. And so the COVID may or may not have entered into their death, but at least you could make some causality there that said it certainly contributed to it. And there's no question but what the COVID has major impact on our hearts and other functions of the body. That's indisputable. But whether or not the things that happen, which generally don't start to show up for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, during which time most of the people that die from it have died. So I think those morbidity factors may be grossly exaggerated. they impact people and they suffer maybe for life, but I don't know that it came into the death. So I wanted to know, they're reporting new cases now as if that's the thing that makes all the difference. Well, I can show you incident after incident where somebody bought a box of 200 test kits and sent them in without using them, and they came back positive. Okay. There are all kinds of examples of that. So the testing itself probably causes some of the new cases, and the ones that have been sent in that weren't used that came back positive add to the number as well. So I said, let's look at the 6% where you can actually say they had the COVID and they died from the COVID. Well, the current death count is roughly 230,000. 6% of that would be 13,800, okay? The U.S. population is 330 million people. That means that there is one death for every 23,913 people, okay? So a city half the size of Greeley would have one death. Now, I said, how can I illustrate how many people that is? Well, I thought, let me take that 23,913 people and socially distance them in a straight line. Okay? How far do you think that would go?
Are they 6 feet apart?
Huh?
Are they 6 feet apart?
Yes. They're 6 feet apart. You would have to travel 27.2 miles to walk from one end of it to the other. Now, if you assume that I'm going to leave an empty spot every time somebody dies out of that 23,913, the number of deaths would be represented in 27-mile increments. Okay? So if you think you're at high risk of dying from the COVID, I want you to go walk from here to Loveland and imagine that you're passing a person every 6 feet. And that's how much your risk of dying from the COVID is. Not trying to say what the morbidity rate is for those that legitimately get the COVID. We all know those statistics. They're, if you're over 70, it's 94% are going to survive it. If you're under 70, it's as much as 99.7% will survive it. Little children, their survival rate is 99.7%, so we ought to keep them out of school forever, right? Don't think so. Anyway, 27 miles. Well, I thought, I wonder how much it would be if I stretched it around the world. Well, if I made it the entire U.S. population, everybody else is gone. We're only going to have the U.S. population going around the world. There's 330 million people. You space them 6 feet apart, there it will take 1,980,000 feet to put them all go in a straight line. That's 375,000 miles. That still works out to 27 miles per death. If the Earth is 24,000 feet or miles around, that line would go 16 times around the world to spread the U.S. population out at social distancing. and you would find a dead person every 27 miles, which means that each time you went all the way around the world, there would be 819 dead people in that entire trip around the world. You just don't have a huge chance that you're going to die from the COVID, folks. And yet, all we hear in the Democrat Party and in the news media is COVID, 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 COVID. And you have to ask yourself, why are they doing that? Because with fear comes control. And I believe that this is a dry run for what they anticipate doing if they win this election. They're trying to see how we will react to having our rights taken away. And I want to look at what they've already done with it. What does the First Amendment guarantee us?
The right to gather.
Right to what?
The right to peacefully gather together and assemble.
Okay, the right to assemble. Let's just pull it up and read it, shall we? Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. How many of those rights have they violated?
Just about all.
Can anybody name one of them they haven't violated? And yet, what has been our reaction? We see people out riding their bicycles with masks on 20 miles away from the city.
They haven't went to 27 miles yet.
When they get to the 27th mile, they'll die. Why don't you read that? It is a very important document, and we in fact have a copy of it here during the weeks when it was doubtful that we were going to be able to meet.
I won't read you the whole thing, but it says, federal law provides that it is a crime to violate the constitutional rights of a citizen under the color of law. You can be arrested for this crime, and you can also be held personally liable for civil damages. Attempting to coerce or deceive a citizen to surrender his constitutional rights is a federal crime. Federal courts have found that your ignorance of the law is no excuse. 18 U.S.C., and then it has a little thing, 242, that's color of law, the law 242, provides that whoever, under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both, and if death results, or if such acts include kidnapping or an attempt to kidnap, aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to kill, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for any term of years or for life or both, or may be sentenced to death. So there were some people arguing that the people that were arresting people in their shops for not wearing masks, that's kidnapping. So the kidnapping under the color of law is actually a death penalty sentence possibility. So you need to know your rights. Like, people cannot violate your rights to constitutional. constitutionally protected rights. And this goes on, it's actually a form you can just print up off the internet, you can put their name on it, and at the very bottom it says, warning, you may be in violation of federal law, and persisting with your demand may lead to your arrest and or civil damages. Also understand that the law provides you can be held personally responsible and liable, as well as your company and or agency. You are advised to cease and desist with your demand and to seek personal legal counsel if you do not understand the law. Notice of service, and then you put your name and put their name and let them know. I mean, I'm done. I'm done with people touching my...
I want you to answer one question.
Yeah.
Does that say that the party who does that has to be a law enforcement officer?
No.
No.
It's anyone trying to take away your rights, and they don't even have to know that they're breaking the law to be found guilty of breaking the law.
So would that include a governor?
Yes. We should be shipping this Governor Polis by the thousands.
That's right.
I mean, you should just be mailing it to him every day. He is breaking the color of law, and he's doing it over and over again in every possible way we can.
Doug.
So I think it's important as Christians that we understand that what's taking place right now is fundamentally the opposite.
Take your hand down. I can't hear you.
It's fundamentally the opposite of Christianity. We are people who believe in law. We don't believe in the opposite of law, anarchy. And if we don't care about these things as Christians, then I think that we're displaying to the world that we don't actually believe anything that we say that we believe about covenant works, about God as a lawgiver, about order and justice and righteousness. We just throw it all out the window. And I think this is really serious Christian stuff that we're dealing with here.
Oh, it is. That's why we're doing this.
I just think it's a point that needs to be made, because I'm hearing and seeing these pastors, especially pastors that I respect, saying that we've got this kind of moral equivalence going on of, well, we've got this terrible, mean, nasty guy as a president, and then we've got another guy who wants to have abortion. But it's all just the same thing. And no, it's not the same thing. It's not even close to moral equivalency. One is literally the overthrowing of everything that we believe about Christianity. And the other is a guy who's a sinner, which is kind of what I am.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump is proud. Therefore, we can shut everybody up who believes in Christianity.
So I just think it's really important that, like, it's good that we're talking about it, but we as Christians need to understand that this, you cannot separate what we're talking about here from our Christian faith.
That's right.
If we do that, then what Christian faith do we even have?
I'd like to say, whenever we go to rallies or protests or whatever, and we see different groups together, you always see the same people on each side of the issue. The conservatives, you'll see the police flag, the blue stripe, and then you'll have the black stripe. Right? And then you'll see the Gadsden flag, you'll see the American flag, you'll see anti-abortion placards, but on the other side, it's always the same people. You see the rainbow flag, you see Antifa flags, you see everything that's against what we stand for. And some people, i.e. John Piper, talk about Trump's pride and how he would rather not put his political views in favor of Trump because of his pride, while at the same time, de facto, is a half a vote for Biden if he does not vote at all.
Well, I want to tag on that for just a minute, because we're all familiar with Epstein Island, but how many of us are familiar with the fact that the island next door to that is owned by Joe Biden, and that both of those islands have a submarine port in them?
Part of the island is owned by Joe Biden.
What?
Joe Biden owns part of the island, just to keep facts facts.
Well, yeah. Yeah. He doesn't own the entire island. There's one beach on the other side of the island that he gave to the president of China.
Same thing.
I don't know that that's true. But I want you to think about the fact that John Piper obviously doesn't know that, or if he does, doesn't think that child sex trafficking is the moral successor to adultery. It's worse than adultery.
Well, having taught in the public schools, I know how depraved some of these union people are. And it grows more and more intimidating by the year, because it did while I was there, and anti-Christian thought. To where I had to be careful about what I said, even about the most depraved situations. And some pastors are lending their votes to the benefit of those who oppress Christians. And anyone who would speak favorably of the gospel. And I just don't understand how these people sleep with themselves at night. They are so blinded and so unaware of what's going on there in the real world. They need to get out more.
Well, that's right. And Rick, I'll get back to you in just a second. When one of the candidates comes out and says, I'm going to get rid of the Second Amendment, you better believe him. And he may not be able to pass an amendment that takes that right away, but he has a formula by which he's going to impose a tax on ammunition that will cost every gun owner $4,000 per year. Now, if that's not getting rid of the Second Amendment, I don't know what is. So, Rick?
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, talking with customers all year, there's some hope. When you talk about the God of nature, and nature's the nature of God, people are realizing things. I don't know if it'll affect the vote, but for instance, I think they're burning their bridges with these arbitrary things to do what they did to us, for instance. What they did to us this weekend is multiplied by the thousands. They've allowed two families in one house, 10 people, right? That's why we got together, Pete and I, and talked to delay it or whatever. There is 914 square foot on an aircraft, and there's 143 people on a 737. You put them apart, if you could, they're 15 inches apart. Our house has 2,000 square foot. If we all met in this room in it, we had 77 square foot apart from each other. And that's not unreasonable, minus the bedrooms. We have space to be safer than this room. This room, I just measured it, has about 3,000, about maybe 900 square foot right here. We're violating what they said in the house. It just shows people are starting to wake up. They're not reasoning here. This is trapping. And people are feeling that with Thanksgiving, Christmas coming up. They're like, wait a minute. And so they're faced with, this is ridiculous. Maybe it's some hope that will affect Tuesday. We'll see.
Well, we're at the end of this little episode of time, so who had a question?
Oh, did you answer her question? She had a question.
Yeah, about Guam and Puerto Rico, if they had electoral votes.
Oh, I didn't get back to that. They do not have electoral college votes. Neither did the District of Columbia until a few years ago when they passed legislation granting the District of Columbia electoral college votes as if they were a state. So
if you vote in Guam, where does those votes go?
They go towards the popular vote count, but not towards the electoral college. But the Democrats have already come out and said they will make Puerto Rico and Guam states. That'll be one of their first things they're going to do, and they'll make the District of Columbia a state.
Okay.
And those two territories, Guam and Puerto Rico, vote 90% Democrat. So we will lose control of the Senate forever.
Well,
there's a lot at risk here, yes.
And to just say because they only go to the public vote doesn't mean that they don't really get any electoral votes, because you now have states that are deciding the electoral college based on popular vote.
Well, that has not yet passed, because they have to get 270 votes to pass it, and okay, they're at 170 or something.
Okay.
They're way short of it, so it won't be in effect this year.
Okay.
But if a few more states pass that agreement. Now, here's an interesting thing. In the Constitution itself, it says no state can enter into a compact with any other state. It's right in the Constitution, yet they're blatantly doing it. So I do have one defense against Guam. One of our esteemed Democrat congressman, in a hearing in Congress, said, "I'm really fearful if we bring more people to Guam that it will tip over." So let's send a few more people to Guam and tip it over.